Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, November 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, the big day is on the horizon. And for those of us in the kitchen, Thanksgiving can be very hectic. You know, I only have a couple things that I have to do. One is the onion dip, and my special recipe calls for sour cream and then some dried onion soup. So that one I got covered. And then I do the cranberry sauce, and you have to open the can very carefully and put it out. So it's very stressful. To help us get through all that is Jennifer Clare, a culinary instructor and founder of Home Cooking New York. You got a question about getting ready for Thanksgiving? This is one of our favorite guests. She comes here every Thanksgiving. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On this Food Friday, we offer some assistance to all you soon-to-be busy cooks and bakers loading up for the Thanksgiving table. Here with her tips and suggestions for the big day is Jennifer Clare. Jennifer is a culinary instructor and the founder of Home Cooking New York, a cooking school in New York City. She's the author of 6 Basic Cooking Techniques, a culinary essential, culinary essentials for the home cook. Jennifer is a former food editor at Martha Stewart Living and the former recipes editor at the Wall Street Journal, for Pete's sake. Jennifer also recently launched the cooking podcast, Kitchen Radio. Well, it's not so recent. It's on hiatus, but it's still there, Kitchen Radio, and she lives in the Hudson Valley. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, and I will endeavor to check the email box couple times during the show. Meantime, the number is 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare, welcome back. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. I love that this is part of my Thanksgiving tradition.
I love that you come and we talk food and just have a good time. And how is the cooking school going?
It's going pretty good. I mean, obviously the pandemic was not bad for cooking at home. That's what
depends on who the cook is.
Right. It wasn't about how well you did it, but everybody was at home.
Yeah.
People weren't eating out. People, you know, they were doing takeout, but sort of limited. And so I had an explosion of clientele. Everyone was cooking at home.
And you were doing virtual.
I had to close our school in New York City. I didn't close it for good, but I had to lock the door and walk away.
And you're open again, though,
in
right?
March. We are back open. So it was closed for about 17 months. And in that time, we rebuilt a business and sort of followed the sort of explosion of virtual experiences. All of a sudden, people were doing everything online. And well, it turns out you can cook online very well because it's essentially like a private in-home class where you open up your laptop, you log into one of our virtual classes, and there's the instructor in their kitchen. Sometimes it was me in my Beacon kitchen.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, we always had up to 10 people. And so I got very skilled at looking at 10 different kitchens at once and, you know, thematic, whether it's how to cook bagels or a French ratatouille workshop. And
you do it all. That's right. You do bagels, too. But, you know, here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
And we've talked to a number of people who had cooking schools who then went virtual during the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, Jennifer Clare can't walk around and taste it and say, boy, that's lousy.
It's true. I mean, you have to sort of use different methods to sort of impart education. What I kind of loved is because most of the teaching I had been doing before the pandemic is people are coming to our kitchen. You know, we're teaching them how to cook. We are all tasting everything together. But when you're in your own home, it's so much more personalized. So I would say, you know, something as boring as like, get out a medium-sized saucepan. And people would be like, what's a medium-sized saucepan?
Well, I'm with you there.
Yeah. So they would hold, and I loved because everybody was holding up saucepans in their camera view. And I'd be like, yes, yes, no, yes, no.
Oh, that's great.
And it was a great way to spend the pandemic, both for myself, because then I, you know, had something to do with myself, but I kept all my teachers employed and I gave, you know, things for people to do while they were stuck at home.
And I think that's a key. I mean, so many people were going a little stir crazy. I mean,
yeah.
Those of us who weren't in the WAMC newsroom and we came in every day during this had to do something. And that's great. The boot camp is something that I could really use.
Okay.
Tell me what happens when you go to the boot camp at Home Cooking New York.
All right. Well, so it's called the culinary boot camp for adults. Right. We call it that because we also did one for kids during the pandemic
as well.
That
must have been fun.
So it's actually a program that we've been running for almost, 8 years at the school. And it's, it's been successful. We always have, it's 10 people at a time. And it's sort of like a condensed cooking school curriculum. So all of us went to a formal cooking school. But a lot of what you learn in a cooking school is not applicable to just home cooks who just want to, want to know how to feed themselves.
Yeah.
So we sort of consolidated all the highlights of a culinary curriculum, had knife skills, how to work with meat, make pan sauces, seasonings, seasoning food properly, roasting, braising.
Now, are these part of the six basic techniques? Yeah. Is this what we're based on here?
Well, the book that I wrote, The Six Basic Cooking Techniques, is like the super cliff note version of the boot camp.
Yeah.
So it's six chapters, knife skills, meats, vegetables, yada, yada, yada.
Do you yell at people during the boot camp?
No. That's not. If I wanted to yell at people, I would have worked in a restaurant kitchen.
Drop and give me 20, that sort of thing. No.
Boot camp just sounds kind of sexy, so we, that's why we call it. And also, it was based on my husband runs a business, a music school in Beacon, called the Beacon Music Factory, and he runs something called the Rock Band Boot Camp. And so I sort of got the name from the idea where he's basically taking adults through the creation and the formation of a band, and then you have not a recital.
You have a performance.
And so when I started doing it, I'm like, oh, culinary boot camp.
So what you're saying is you are both, you and your husband, the most patient people in the world, because if there's one thing worse than a guy who can't cook, it's a guy who can't play the guitar and goes up and tries to make a band. I speak from experience.
Right. Yes, I guess patience does have a lot to do with it. I also am not a perfectionist, and that really helps. You don't decide to go into a teaching profession, no matter what you teach, whether it's, ceramics or guitar, if you have a perfectionist streak in your body, because then you're going to go mad.
Yeah.
I just kind of first of all, I like people a lot, if you can't tell, and I like food. And so that teaching is just hanging around people and food all the time, and people get really jazz when they learn something, especially adults. Anytime I teach, people will sort of focus on one particular thing and they'll be like, that was worth the whole class. If I teach them how to cut an onion or I explain.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You cut an onion. You get a knife, you cut an onion.
Yeah,
how do you do it?
Just how you do it most efficiently so you don't cry because you get it on and off your cutting board really quickly.
Well, do tell.
Yeah. Well, it's how do I vocalize that?
Okay.
All right, well, you cut it through the root end. That's the first thing.
Really?
So the whole thing doesn't fall apart. So you have two halves that are connected at the root. So when you cut it, you're cutting it just into slices that don't fall apart on your cutting board. You sort of keep the onion in together.
Do you refrigerate the onion first?
I don't.
Do
I mean,
some people
there is a lot of old wives' tales out there. I feel bad about these old wives because I'm
a lot of old wives.
I'm an old wife
you
too.
You are not.
Right?
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Thanksgiving cooking tips with Jennifer Claire today, and we'll get to the phones shortly. Do you ever get bored with Thanksgiving? It's usually the same thing. I got the turkey, I got the stuffing, I got the cranberry sauce, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Anything
new on your table?
No?
Oh, yes. No. There's always something new on the table, but it's, of course, always a balance because I have 10 people coming to Thanksgiving and everybody has the thing that they want to see on the table.
Yeah.
And so you have to keep everything the same. But then, of course, I have to throw some things in there. And so the thing that I'm excited about is I'm a huge fan of this woman. She's a culinary instructor and cookbook author named Samin Nosrat. She wrote a pivotal book called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. To me, all those things are what make food taste good. Salt, fat, acid, and heat.
See, now that's the name of a band that your husband should be.
It should, yeah, it's great.
Your band is going to be called.
An excellent collection of words.
Yeah.
So she's Iranian American, first generation.
Yeah.
And when she went to Thanksgiving meals of her friends, when she was young, because her parents didn't celebrate the holiday, she'd be like, why? Everything is the same color, the same texture. She was sort of so confused why this big special holiday was filled with just some of the most boring foods. And it's true. Some typical Thanksgivings can feel boring.
Yeah.
Stuffing, it's brown. Mashed potatoes, they're mushy.
Yeah.
The turkey is often overcooked. The gravy is brown. It's just a lot of monochrome.
Yeah.
So she wrote a little piece for the New York Times, I think it was out last week, about how to make Thanksgiving less boring. That was literally the title of the article. And so I'm going to do one of the tricks that she had, which was basically creating a fried crunch element that you put in a bowl and you can sprinkle on anything you want.
Oh my God, I love it.
It's deep fried. You just bring like a cup of oil to a boil. You fry homemade breadcrumbs, shallots, and like whole leaves of sage and rosemary.
Oh my God, that sounds great.
Yeah, but not all at the same time. You cook each element till it's perfect, skim it out, and then you sprinkle it with salt and pepper and put it on the table. So you can sprinkle that on your string beans, your mashed potatoes, your mac and cheese.
So like the French fried onions that I will buy in a can and put out.
It's that plus way more
that
yum.
That is so great.
I know. So I'm like, oh, that's what I'm going to do. Because that I feel like that is what's devoid in sort of your traditional Thanksgiving food is texture.
Yeah.
Color is another one, and acid. So those three things, if you can ramp up those three things, you're going to have a better Thanksgiving.
I like it. Jennifer Claire joins us today, 800-348-2551. You got a Thanksgiving cooking question? Let's get the calls in here, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Henry Mancini and Peter Gunn. It's not really appropriate for Thanksgiving, but I thought, what the heck? Jennifer Claire is here. 800-348-2551 is our number. And let's go to the phones. Alexander in Waterford, you're on.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good.
I'm cooking for Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and I wanted to do something a little different. And I actually enjoy more dark meat mm-hmm. than the white. And so I was thinking about duck, because I really enjoy duck when other people prepare it, but I've never actually prepared it myself.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's anything I should be, like, aware of.
Don't set the house on fire with all the fat, right?
Well, it's nothing like a turkey in the way that you cook it, so it's not, you know, it's just sort of creating another, a very different dish.
Now, are you a big fan of this, Jennifer?
I'm not a big fan of roasting a whole duck,
okay.
And I'll tell you why. And that's because I love both the breast meat and the legs, but they do not cook at the way that you cook each one is different. And so to put the whole bird in the oven and hope that you get good legs and a good breast meat, it doesn't happen.
What, do you separate it out?
Yeah, well, I don't buy a whole duck. So I buy duck breasts. So you sear duck breasts so that the skin is crazy crispy and you can keep the meat nice and rare because it's delicious that way. And then the legs are so tough and sinewy that you want to braise them. You cook them in like some sort of, you know, wine or broth or tomatoes or something, but they need sort of long, slow, moist heat so they can be yummy and not sort of chewy. So I'd skip the legs altogether. I would say do some duck breast because that, if you like dark meat, which I love too, that is, it's so good. And it doesn't take very long. Duck breast, you know, start to finish, maybe 15 minutes.
And how many to serve? How many would you need to buy to serve to 6 or 7 people?
There's two different kinds of duck breasts you can buy. There's like Peking duck breasts, and they're like these cute little lobes, two of them. And a whole duck breast, meaning both sides, would serve 2 people. And then you can get those big, they're called magrette. And they're like giant lobes, dark red meat, because they're kind of aged on the bone.
Oh, is that like a steroid thing? How do they get so big?
It's a different breed.
Yeah.
And they're what you think of as duck, because it's like really dark red. It's sort of a big slice. And one of those will feed. That's a half a breast. They sell it. It's basically half a pound per person. So whatever kind of duck you're getting, that's what you do the measurement.
Alexander, you want to follow up, sir?
No, it sounds very good. Now, braising, though, you say that is done, you cook it like on top of the stove in like a wine sauce?
Yep. Braising is when you just cook something in a closed system, like with a lid on it, with a little bit of water. Not water, that's never a good idea, but some sort of liquid. So
why is water not a good idea?
Because there's zero flavor. So if you're going to choose a liquid, at least choose one that's going to impart flavor on the duck as opposed to...
So it's not a hazard because the duck is so fatty that the water will cause a terrible fire that'll splatter all over the place.
But it's moist heat, so it's like kind of steaming it, and you can cook it a long time without it drying out, and then the texture is better.
Would I use a red or a white wine? And that's a serious question. I don't like sound funny, but...
No. It's not. I guess I would say red wine. It will discolor the bird because...
Right.
It's going to make it look kind of purple. I would definitely look for a recipe online because there's more than just wine that goes in there. It's broth and aromatics. So,
but to be clear, Jennifer Clare, you would not touch this with a 10-foot pole for Thanksgiving.
I would do duck breasts, but I would skip the legs.
All right, Alexander, thanks a lot for the call. It's Food Friday. Jennifer Clare is here from Home Cooking New York. The number is 800-348-2551. And we go to Chuck in Hudson. Chuck.
How you doing?
Good.
In our sauce for the turkey is dark apple cider.
Ooh. Wait, what's dark apple cider? You mean the boozy stuff or the non-alcoholic cider?
No, the non-alcoholic.
Okay.
And another thing, how would you cook a turkey that's upside down, and what kind of tools do you need? Because this way you cook it upside down, the breast doesn't get dry.
Interesting.
Yes, I have heard that method. But the truth of the matter is the turkey breast will not get dry if you pull it out of the oven when it is properly cooked. Breast meat gets dry because people overcook the breast. Once the breast is 155, 57 degrees, you can pull it out. Because 160 is done for breast meat, and it will still keep cooking. But you really should honestly check the legs, too, because they take longer to cook. So if you cook it upside down, I mean, you can. It would protect it from getting overcooked. But as long as you have an instant read thermometer, you should be able to save your turkey from getting dry in the first place.
What kind of rack would you use?
Same thing. I would use like a V-shaped rack. And you could put it upside down. You don't need anything more special to roast it breast side down as you do leg side down.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. We appreciate it. The meat thermometer, extraordinarily important, as
like,
I've discovered.
Don't even bother having Thanksgiving unless you've got one. Oh, here's another tip.
Yeah.
You get a turkey that comes with one of those plastic pop-up timers.
Yeah.
Guess what you do with it?
Throw it away?
Exactly.
Isn't there some way you can reuse it for some other purpose?
It's useless.
Okay, fair
enough.
But
it's also, you know, no one wants to be sued on Thanksgiving. So any company that sticks one of those in their birds.
So this is
it's basically, you know, coated to pop at 200 degrees.
So that would not be good.
No. Yeah. So throw it away and just buy a $10 instant read thermometer. And when your legs are 160 is fine because you want it to be 165, and that bird, the bigger your bird, the more it's going to keep cooking.
I mean, this is my question, and frankly, what do I know from meat thermometers? Nothing.
Okay.
But you put a hole in the bird, all the juice comes out,
tiny
right?
Tiny hole. This day and age, they're called instant read thermometers, so the probe is so thin. And maybe you'll get a little trickle, but it's not it's not like a wound.
And you can also check the turkey for COVID at the same time. So it's Joan in Northampton. Joan, you're on.
Hi, I'm just, everybody talks about food getting boring.
Yeah.
I've started putting Chinese five spice in my squash. It doesn't taste like Chinese food.
No, well, it's not Chinese. Doesn't give it a Chinese taste. It just spices that are typically used in Chinese cooking. So star anise, fennel, clove, cinnamon.
Right, and it's just a little different than the brown sugar and
butter. I agree. I love
use.
Five spice powder. Tell me what you do with it with your squash.
Oh, I just mix it in before I even cook the squash.
When you like roast it?
Yeah, when I cut it in half and throw it in my oven, I put it there with the butter.
I love that idea. Yeah, those spice blends that are sort of focused on warming Thanksgiving-y spices. Five spice powder can also be swapped out for pumpkin pie spice because they're pretty similar.
Really?
Yeah. But I like five spice powder because it's got star anise, which is a fennel-y taste.
Yeah. Some people don't like that.
They don't. And if you don't, stay away from five spice powder. You know what? If you don't like it and you like spice blend, you can do pumpkin pie spice or garam masala, which is an Indian spice blend. Similar, lots of warming, cozy.
Garam masala?
Garam masala.
I think
masala
I had that
means
once.
Mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took about 2 weeks to go away.
No.
Joan, you got a follow up.
Oh, no. Just throwing that out. Somebody wants something different.
Thanks for the call, 800-348-2551. The great Jennifer Clare joins us today from downstate. She drove all the way up here. Huh. It's been a couple of years since you've been back in the studio.
I know, 2 years.
Very good.
Back in the saddle again.
And you brought something. What'd
I
you bring?
Did. Well, let's start with some savory food. I brought you two little treats here, Thanksgiving
treats. All right,
treats.
So you unpack that, and can you talk and work at the same time?
I can.
All right, so let's go to Marie from
Galway, and then we'll unpack the goods. 800-348-2551. Marie, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I am having a large family gathering on Sunday because everybody's doing something different for Thanksgiving. So we are having about a whole pork tenderloin, probably 15 pounds. And I was wondering if you had any ideas of how to do it different. I told everybody we were having the roast pork tenderloin and that I would be serving mashed potatoes with a mushroom and onion gravy. But as far as seasoning the pork itself, what could I do that's special?
So is it like roll, like, is it tied up for you? You have this tenderloin in your possession?
I do.
Are you, a cop?
Well, it's probably not a tenderloin. Tenderloin is sort of the end of a, it's probably a pork loin. And the reason.
Yes, it's a whole pork loin.
Yeah. So tenderloin is like the long, skinny part that cooks in about 12 minutes.
Interesting.
But you're looking at like a big roast. Well, number one is, do you have an instant read thermometer?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because you need it. Because pork loin is really lean. You know, pork, the other white meat, they started breeding pigs to be very lean all of a sudden. And that is not great for certain cuts of pork. And pork loin is got very little fat in it. So just make sure you're pulling it out of the oven when it's registering almost 140. I don't care what any recipe says. They're
really?
Going to try to tell you to pull it out at like 150 or more. But if it's really big, like a Thanksgiving turkey, it's going to keep cooking. So I pull it out at 140, hoping it goes up to 145. So all the seasoning is kind of, you can either brine it, you know, for a couple days so the seasoning penetrates it, which would be kind of nice, especially for a lean cut like pork loin. So like, you know, anything with, it's going to be sugar and salt solution.
But you are a liquid briner and not a dry briner?
I like both.
Yeah.
Liquid brining is good for lean meats because it actually literally plumps up the bird. But I'm doing a dry brine this year of smoked paprika, brown sugar, and salt.
Oh my gosh, that sounds great.
That could work too. But I would definitely, tonight is Friday, I would choose to dry or wet brine it starting today because that's how you're going to get the flavor.
I have the wet brine, but it's just, I don't know what spices to put in.
I would smash up some garlic cloves, like crumple up some herbs. Put some orange zest in there.
Oh,
I mean, it's not going to, brines don't really give you a tremendous amount of flavor. It's mostly salt. That's what's going to come through in the flavor. But like a hint of anything, rosemary, orange, fennel seeds, smashed garlic.
Mmm, delicious.
Yeah.
One of our regular emailers recommends Moxie, which is the most billiest stuff in the world.
What is Moxie?
It's this, it's this soda.
Drink?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not, some people love it. It's a New England thing. It's like
what's the flavor?
I can't really say it on the radio. No, it's like a root beer, but it's.
Wait, you mean as a brine?
He's just joking. Every day he writes in and says, can I use Moxie on this? Marie, just to be clear, we don't recommend that, but thank you very much for the call. All right, Jennifer, Claire, what'd you bring?
All right, well, I'm embarrassed because I had to bring you some deli turkey because I don't have any actual turkey.
Oh, is this the Hillshire Farms?
It's probably Boar's Head. But
I love Boar's Head.
I brought you some fresh cranberry sauce, and I'll tell you why.
Because
it ticks two of the boxes. Remember I said there's three things.
Color.
Color, texture, and acid. So this is color and acid. So, you know, people open up the can of cranberry sauce. You can't stop people from doing that. That's fine.
So
but that's like
you're
cranberry.
Mocking me for doing that?
Well, it's just... It's cranberry jelly, so it's sweet.
Yeah.
So my two problems with cranberry sauce from a can is, number one, it's too sweet, tastes like jelly.
Right.
And number two is color.
Are you going to have
it's
some?
Always got... No, I'm good. Right. I've got some in the car, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have the second thing I'm giving you is in the car.
All right, fair enough. Continue.
Okay, so when you open up that can of cranberry sauce, it's kind of a muted color. Like, look at the color of this. This, if you want to describe this, it's like a wild fuchsia. This is a fresh cranberry sauce,
And it's got texture, too. I think this checks another box.
Acid and color.
Yep.
So it's not a cloyingly sweet cranberry sauce. This is fresh cranberry sauce.
Rip the turkey with my fingers because I forgot a knife. I'm a terrible producer.
So, right, in a saucepan, you literally just take one of those bags of frozen whole cranberries or defrosted. You put a quarter cup of orange juice in there, third of a cup of sugar, and you grate some fresh ginger in there for a little bit of a kick.
You did this a couple of years ago, didn't you?
Maybe. I do it every year.
On the show.
Oh, I brought it in?
I think so. It's so good. And we put a couple of recipes up, by the way, on our website.
Right. This is one of them.
Yeah.
And it's just so embarrassingly easy. You put everything in a saucepan, you cook it for 10 minutes, and it's done.
I got to be honest with you, Jennifer Claire, yeah. that's even better than the canned stuff.
No.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Yeah. I mean, and I love it. It's really, the thing that is best is the fact that it is not that sweet. It's yeah. got some flavor profile to it. Yeah, it's really
like a
good.
Chutney. So, yeah, I could call it a cranberry chutney. So
I could put that on a cracker.
So that's great for leftover turkey sandwiches. I mean, that is something that I use for a condiment. It's like a sandwich spread. So that, I feel like you have to have some sort of actual cranberry sauce as opposed to just the can.
All right, fair enough. I am well chastised. Let's go back to the phones before we do the next thing. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jennifer Claire joins us for Thanksgiving cooking tips. Jacob's in Cohoes. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, I just had one quick comment about turkey temperature.
Okay.
I go full up to 155, 160, mm-hmm. and then I take it out and then cover it with foil and towels and let it cook the rest of the way outside of the oven. That's just my thing. But I wanted to actually ask you about gravy technique.
Okay.
So, like, I just boil the neck and an onion and a piece of garlic mm-hmm. and a bay leaf and then use that and make a roux later. But am I doing, is there anything else that I could be doing to make it easier on myself?
No. I mean, I definitely think making a turkey stock, which is what you're describing, is the way to go. I usually use the wingtips too. Anything random I can find. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Usually the neck. Boil it down just so it tastes good. Like at some point,
right.
you're going to taste and you're going to be like, that tastes delicious. So, yeah, that's your gravy. And then you make drippings, you know, you make your roux out of the drippings from the turkey, right?
I usually use butter.
Yeah,
and
butter's
then
good, but
I
you
add drippings afterwards.
Well, there's when you the stuff that comes out of the turkey when you cook it. There's two parts to it. There's the fat, and then there's the dripping. So the fat is the clear yellow stuff. That's turkey fat,
right?
And that's
right.
the fat you want to yeah. use to make your roux because it's turkey. I mean, I like butter too, but if you've got turkey, it's basically schmaltz, turkey schmaltz. So you mix that with the flour,
oh.
and that's the base. So you already have a you know a huge level of flavor there. You got to get one of those separators,
geez.
And then so the fat floats to the top, and then everything on the bottom, the brown, murky stuff, those are your drippings. And yes, you add those drippings to your turkey broth, and that becomes the liquid that you add to your roux. But definitely use the turkey fat.
So my problem with that, though, is just timing, because I always try to time boiling down and reducing that broth.
You do it while
right
the turkey's cooking. You don't need to. Just do it the night before. When you take a turkey out to cook, you got to take that.
Okay,
like that should be done ahead of time. So you're only,
okay,
while
right.
the turkey is.
I always do it all the same day. So, okay, that makes sense.
But it could even be done during the roasting of the turkey. But yeah, don't, nothing
okay.
a la minute, which means things you do at the last minute, is not what Thanksgiving's
right.
about. The only thing you need to make a la minute is gravy, because you need that turkey to be done to make it.
Okay, well, tell my family. But thank you guys so much.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, and we appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jennifer Claire is our guest. And let's take a couple of emails here, then we'll take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one is from Joe. And subject heading, drinking while cooking.
Mm-hmm.
To help deal with the emotional scarring from interacting with relatives over the holidays, I like to sip on a Thanksteeny. It's a novelty cocktail consisting of cranberry juice, potato vodka, and a pinch of bouillon cube. It's like turkey dinner in a glass. It helps me reflect on the fact that Thanksgiving is a time to count our blessings one by one as each dysfunctional relative goes home. Would you please ask Jennifer...
Is there a question in there?
Yes, here comes the question from Joe. Would you please ask Jennifer if it's considered bad practice to indulge in a holiday cocktail or two while preparing Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, what kind of cook would I be if I said that you couldn't drink while cooking? I mean, everything in moderation. I love a cocktail while I'm cooking. I like wine while I'm cooking. I'll tell you, I mean, that doesn't sound delicious to me.
The drink?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds a little bilious.
Yeah, but I do. My latest favorite cocktail is the Blood Orange Negroni.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So Negroni is fantastic.
I love, because it's got the acid in
it. Absolutely.
I don't like sweet drinks. So Negroni's got Campari in it, gin, and blood orange juice. And to me, it's like just just all, it's all, it's got the cut there. It's got two. Yeah. It's got the color and it's got the acid.
I love that.
No texture.
Negroni, you can't go wrong. And by the way, Joe says your culinary website is great. So there you go.
Thank you.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jennifer Claire joins us today to help you get ready for Thanksgiving. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Jennifer Claire joins us on Food Friday. When you do your home cooking via Zoom or whatever you're doing it, do some of your students have a couple of cocktails while they're cooking?
Yes.
Really?
I
and you're
tell,
like, okay?
Yeah.
You don't give them a timeout?
No.
Or?
They're adults. All right. Like, if I have the nice thing about Zoom, here's the, this is better than teaching in person. You can mute your students.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So if people are getting a little saucy or like their dog starts barking or their kids are yelling or they have a row, I can just click that mute button and then everything is quiet again.
Well,
but it's, I do. I really do love teaching virtually. First of all, because I don't have to leave home. But it is nice to peek into people's lives and homes. I'm a bit of a voyeur.
But, you know, the funny thing is, though, you talk about this and so many people have been at home and doing WebEx meetings or Zoom meetings or whatever. Everybody sets it up so their coworkers or whoever looks behind and says, oh, what an idyllic situation
you're
in.
Well, some people do those, what are they called, the virtual backgrounds?
Oh, I didn't know about that.
What? Yes. You can,
I've never done a Zoom meeting in my life or a WebEx.
I don't like them. And actually, I like people to see into my home kitchen because I am a professional, you know, culinary human. And I have a very just normal kitchen. Like, it's not bells and whistles. It's not an architectural digest. I don't have, like, fancy wolf gleaming stainless steel stuff. I just have a regular old kitchen. And it doesn't matter if you have the fancy kitchen. You can cook well in any kitchen. So it's. I feel like it's good for people to see that this is what your teacher is cooking out of. You don't have to feel badly.
Well, that's true.
About your kitchen.
Do you ever feel badly when you see some of the upscale kitchens of your students? Yeah, this email from Matt, cornbread stuffing. After I bake my own cornbread, what do I do to get it ready to make my own stuffing? Do I dry it out? And if so, how?
Well, dry it out either two ways. Plan ahead, meaning cook it 3 days ahead, and then sort of take it out of the pan and crumble it on a baking sheet and just set it off to the side for 3 days to dry out. Or if you don't think ahead, you just dry it out in a low oven, like 200 degrees for an
hour. What would you
do? Most likely, I would have to do the oven method because I don't always think that far ahead.
Now, when Marie called about the pork loin, you said start brining it literally today.
Yes.
That wouldn't hold for turkey as well, right?
Well, she's serving it this Sunday. That's why I said
that. Oh, okay. Because I saw that's a lot of brining.
I don't do anything. I start thinking about Thanksgiving on Tuesday.
Really?
I mean, I have the menu. I've written it down. I've run it by all my family members. But I don't brine or prep anything until 2 days before.
I love that. Let's go a couple of more emails and then back to the phones at 800-348-2551. And you brought pie.
I did.
You know why? A fast way to my heart is pie.
This pie is good.
This one's from Sharon, who loves the show and we got to question whether she's got the right radio station on, but that's another story. I try to limit the amount of sodium in my diet, so I always skip brining the turkey. Do I have to, or am I being too cautious? And that's from Sharon.
I mean, if it's more of a mental thing. I don't think you're ingesting more salt by brining it versus putting some salt on the outside, you know, or you're going to have to put more salt in your gravy because it's going to be bland. But it's more of a mental thing. If you're going to be uncomfortable eating this turkey because you think it's riddled with salt, it is not, I don't think you would want to brine your turkey. Sprinkling it with salt on the outside is fine, too.
All right, let's quickly, and then we'll do one more email, and then we'll go to the phones.
Okay.
Quickly, let's talk about Jennifer Claire's method for brining.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm doing a dry brine.
Oh, this year. But,
yeah.
Let's
I'm not a fan of the wet brining, personally.
Why?
It's just a lot of handling. First of all, I don't have a fridge big enough to put my turkey in a plastic bag, which is required. I don't have a second fridge. It's not cold enough these days to put your turkey in the garage, which people used to do when it was cold in Thanksgiving. So it's just like a lot of hassle. So I'd rather just, you know, cook my turkey, get a really good quality turkey, you know, make sure it's going in the oven properly, you know, at room temperature, not ice cold. And then I'm going to make sure it comes out when it's 160. You know, or a little bit less.
Well, so, you know, Rick Orlando, you know Rick Orlando?
Yeah.
So Rick changed our Thanksgiving 4 or 5 years ago with his brining method. Yeah. And basically, you take a cooler and, and you do it in that. And it's.
I can see that would work.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But you just asked me personally.
Ask you personally.
I don't spend a lot of time doing fussy things. What did I say? Texture, color, acid. Those are like the most important things. So you can get all those things with a little bit easier methodology.
What? Now I see the boot camp coming out.
Yeah.
You're about to start yelling at me. So let's go one more email here. This is from Mike in Rexford. Can duck breasts be cooked using the sous vide technique?
Yes, but why? Because duck is all about, you can do that and then you can crisp up the skin afterwards, but then you've just, I don't know. I don't like sous vide. It's boiling things in plastic, and it is. It gives you a desired consistency. People will love it because it's like, you know, the perfect temperature.
Yeah.
But then you got to brown it anyways because you don't want, you know, limp duck skin. So I think you get way better flavor when you brown it first and just finish cooking in the oven. Yeah. Sous vide is not me.
Jennifer Claire is with us today. She's very opinionated. She's fiery today on the program. Let's go back to the phones. Peter's been waiting a while in Kingston. Peter, you're up.
Hey. Brining. I've been brining for years, and I'm kind of allergic to temperature thermometers, and I always have a turkey that is just falling off the bone, and I would never stick a thermometer in it. So, you know, I guess it's different things to different folks. But I did want to say one happy accident that I discovered. I always just throw herbs that are in our garden that are, you know, are still left by Thanksgiving in the brine. And one year I thought I was putting sage in it, but my wife had gotten a new variety of lavender.
Ooh.
And so lavender in your turkey brine came out absolutely extraordinary.
And so you could taste it? You could taste that. You could taste that hint of lavender?
You got to just a hint. I mean, you know, brining, like you said, it doesn't, most of it just kind of gives a little suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
But it did have a sweetness that was pretty awesome.
Cool. Well, Peter, thanks a lot for that one. We appreciate it. This email from Rob in East Granby, Connecticut. I want to know, what does a bay leaf actually do?
Oh, it's a very subtle thing.
Yeah?
It gives sort of a fresh, clean. You'll never be able to be like, oh, that had a bay leaf in it, unless you're putting handfuls of really freshly dried or fresh bay leaves in something.
But you wouldn't do that.
Well, the taste of bay is not something I like crave, so no, I don't.
Okay.
But bay leaves, they're never a bad idea, but it's true, they are, most bay leaves that are sold in the supermarket are so old and ancient that they offer very little. Like, you'd have to get good quality bay leaves.
So it's like the oregano you get in the
oregano you can smell, but a bay leaf doesn't even have an odor, so you can't figure out if it's, you know, my favorite bay leaves are from Penzi's Spices, Penzi.com, or Rancho Gordo. Those are fresh bay leaves.
Okay.
So if you're going to use a bay leaf, at least get one that's not 10 years old.
Jennifer Claire joins us. Debbie is in Troy. Hello, Debbie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. I have a way of making turkey that I've never seen anybody else do it, but it always turns out great. Uh-huh. I just take the turkey. I rub it with olive oil. I put Maldon sea salt on it and some herbs of Provence. And then I pour enough stock around it so it's up around 2-3 inches around the sides. And then I stick it in the oven, and I don't touch it. And what happens is the outside of the skin gets very crusty.
What happens to all the broth?
Yeah, and the inside of the meat steams. So the meat is just super tender. And then I don't even make gravy out of the broth. I just serve the broth, you know, like the loose broth over it, and everybody goes crazy for it. It's really good.
Interesting.
Neato.
Yeah.
Thanks, Debbie. Appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
You can't miss.
Thank you for calling. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jennifer Clare joins us. Lexi writes from Cheshire, Massachusetts. Any special tips or tricks needed for prepping a fresh local heritage bird and cooking it?
No, nothing different between that and, you know, it's usually a little bit leaner, meaning it's not, the breast is
We're
not
We're talking about a turkey, not a crow or something,
no,
right?
No, but like the heritage breeds are bred to not be so top heavy, like
yeah.
You know, butterballs are like all breast.
Right.
So heritage breeds have less breast meat, they're leaner, they probably cook faster.
Yeah.
Because there's less going on there. So just make sure that you're checking its temperature much more quickly than a recipe will tell you to.
No, back to the thermometer.
Yeah.
And again, all of
it's
this
all
is a mystery to me.
I should sell just the turkey thermometers.
I'm an open palate here, so you can help me out fill in some of the colors. When you are putting a meat thermometer into a turkey, where does it go for an accurate result?
I usually put it in the thigh. You always put it in the thickest part of the turkey because you need the thickest part of the turkey to be cooked through. Sticking it just in the breast is kind of doesn't help you because if the breast is perfectly cooked, great. But what about those legs and thighs? And,
really?
You know, the bird is all connected. Some people do cut up their birds for that reason.
Yeah.
But
that's
I
something
always,
you don't do?
No. Again, a lot of work. I do. Here is honestly the best way to cook a turkey. So your breast meat and your thigh and leg meat get done at relatively the same time. And that is, do not stuff your turkey. Nobody likes to hear that. But it's the worst idea for getting meat to cook because you basically have no air circulation at all. You know, it's like a solid basketball of meat because the stuffing is packed in there. There's no airflow. And so it's hard to cook it properly. Whereas if the air is flowing through the cavity, then the breasts and the legs and the thighs are all actually cooking.
All right, I got an idea for you.
Yeah.
What if you made stuffing in a Pyrex dish or whatever, baked it up hot, then scooped it in the turkey?
If
then
you
you're
want
cooking
to.
It from the inside out,
You can do that. You can serve it, jam it into the turkey at the end. But cooking it together is not. So stuffing is stuffing when it's in the turkey, and dressing is what it's called when it's outside the turkey.
Jennifer Clare is with us today. The pie is beckoning, but let's go back to the phones.
Oh, I can't believe you're resisting that.
Jim and Adams. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray.
Hello.
Yes, yay, Ray. Yes, I was talking about the, just yesterday they had a little thing on with Susan Sandberg, former special correspondent for NPR. National NPR.
Sure.
She was talking about her recipe she called it fresh, so I guess that she's using the cranberries raw and not cooking it, but she uses cranberries.
I think fresh cranberry, I call it fresh cranberry sauce too, but I'm cooking those cranberries. But it just means that I'm using fresh cranberries to make the sauce and not a can.
As a side note, Jim.
I haven't looked up her recipe. She said if you go to npr.org and look for her recipe, she uses sour cream, salt, sugar, onions, and then the last thing is
I've
the real
this.
Secret. Yeah. 2 tablespoons of horseradish, and it comes out a shocking light pink color.
Yeah. I know a friend who does this. This is one of those sort of old classic recipes. And it's creamy and hot.
That recipe, by the way,
we're
Jim.
We're going to have the old family, French-Canadian-American family recipe my father-in-law, his chestnut dressing.
Oh, yeah?
They would ground turkey, ground pork, and of course, chestnuts, onions, and mushrooms, and celery.
Tremendous.
And onions.
Well, my friend, have a happy Thanksgiving. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We go to Joy in Maybrook. Joy, you're on.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
We're doing something different this year. We have two very large turkey breasts, and we've had good luck spatchcocking chickens.
Uh-huh.
So we want to spatchcock this breast.
That's a great idea.
What tips do you have for
You mean a turkey breast or a whole turkey spatchcocked?
No, a turkey breast with the bone in.
Do you just have to I mean, spatchcocking is just cooking it flat. So you just have to break that bone. That's hard to do.
Uh-huh.
So it lays flat and you cook it skin side down. If you have a skillet big enough to accommodate it, you basically cook it the whole way through, skin side down, so it keeps contact with the bottom of the pan, so it gets just deep, deep, deep brown.
Mm.
It's good. Usually do it on a grill.
Skin
you could
side
grill
down.
It. Yeah. Spatchcocking is mostly skin
out.
Side down, and then you weight the top of it with like a cast iron skillet, or people like wrap bricks in aluminum foil and put that on, so you're basically pushing down on it. That's a great idea.
All right. Thanks, Joy, and happy Thanksgiving. 800-348-2551. Jennifer, Claire, the pumpkin pie is delicious. While you were talking to Jim from Adams and Joy just now, I tried it. This is tremendous. A, because the crust is superb.
Thank
and
you.
And B, this is one of my favorite pumpkin pies because it's not too sweet.
I'm glad that you said that. So I'm going to tell you a couple things about that pumpkin pie, because I always have to have a little, you know, trick up my sleeve.
Yeah.
One, instead of, you know, evaporated milk or half and half as the dairy, it's coconut milk.
Interesting.
Which you can't even taste.
No, but I can taste the bay leaves.
No, you cannot.
No.
But it's light. And then the whipped cream that I gave you, that's no just standard whipped cream. It's homemade whipped cream, but it's apple cider whipped cream. It's got reduced apple cider in
it. It's so good, though. I bet it's lower calorie, too, right?
Well, there's no sugar in it. I mean,
there's no sugar in it, and I ate it.
No sugar in the whipped cream.
You should have told me beforehand. No, it's beautiful. And the whipped cream, the texture of the whipped cream, perfect.
Thank you.
Jennifer, Claire. Email from our buddy Rob who says, stop. Susan Stamberg's cranberry relish is revolting. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know.
It is a Pepto-Bismol-y color. I don't love that.
Have you tried it? I've never tried it. Well, maybe.
I have seen it because I looked up the recipe recently because somebody told me about it. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to put that on my table. It's like... Yeah, it's the wrong color for Thanksgiving. You want rich fall colors, not strange unicorn colors.
Well, you know, she's been doing it. She's literally...
No disrespect to her.
Since Marconi had his first transmitter, that recipe's been on the air. So let's go to Alan in Whittingham, Vermont. Alan, you're on.
Hi there. This is Alan calling. I'd like to talk to you about using maple syrup on turkeys.
Ooh.
Cool.
And here in Vermont, we make a light and delicate type syrup called fancy syrup, which no other state can make.
Mm-hmm.
And we use that a lot in the sweet potatoes and on turkey because it gives you a light and delicate maple flavor, but it doesn't overpower.
It doesn't burn if you spread maple syrup on a turkey?
Yeah.
Huh.
I'd be worried that
try that. It works really well. But you got to use Vermont maple syrup,
of
not
course.
That New York stuff.
Oh. You know? Certainly not.
Here in Vermont, we only can make a light syrup. No other state can do that. And the syrup is very light and delicate, and you have to try it. Look for fancy syrup or a light fancy syrup.
Okay.
And it doesn't overpower. It works great in sweet potatoes.
Great.
Terrific.
Thank
you. Alan, happy Thanksgiving, my friend. We really appreciate it. Now, we only have about 40 seconds left here, but let's go to James in Pittsfield. James, you're on.
Yeah, hi there. This is a pumpkin pie comment.
Yeah.
That almost everybody uses the wrong pumpkin. There is a heritage breed of pumpkin called a Long Island cheese pumpkin.
Mm-hmm. You're
it's
absolutely
actually
right.
It's the only thing that, in my opinion, makes a decent pumpkin.
Well, cheese pumpkin
pie.
Is what is it? When you open up a can of pumpkin, you're right. It's that kind of pumpkin. It's not like your sugar pumpkin. Even the ones they called pie pumpkins, they're wrong.
All right. Well, I think we'll have to leave it
but
there.
If you can get a fresh cheese pumpkin, it's fabulous.
It. Right, I agree.
Roger that. James, thanks for the call. Hey, Jennifer, Claire, how do people find you on the internet?
My website is homecookingny.com.
And it's such a cool website.
Yeah, thanks. So you can come join us for classes in the city.
I won't do it.
Right, or take virtual classes no matter where you live with me and any of my staff.
Maybe
and I'll... we have actually, I was going to tell you, we have a virtual culinary boot camp starting in January. So if you don't want to come to the city and take our modified boot camp, you can take it online.
Well, it is great to have you here at least once a year. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. We'll talk to you maybe before next year. Who knows? Jennifer, Claire, thanks again. Big Elm Brewing in Sheffield, Massachusetts is an underwriter. Big Elm Brewing in Sheffield, Massachusetts, hours Tuesday through Thursday, noon to 6, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, noon to 7 p.m. Tap room open and curbside pickup available. Information at Big Elm Brewing, BigElmBeer.com. Kiobe Restaurant on Lark Street, featuring Nigerian and African cuisines, offering dine-ins, takeouts, and caterings for offices, events, or special occasions. KiobeRestaurant.com for hours and information. Big Y, a local family-owned and operated market serving communities in Massachusetts and Connecticut for 85 years, with local produce and products, meat, and seafood. BigY.com.
at Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine and spirits retailer for over 40 years, providing products from traditional to new labels, spirithaus.com. Once again, thanks to Jennifer Clare for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and Barb King, our screener. I'm Ray Graff. Have a splendid weekend. We'll see you Monday at 2.